Blog Talk Radio.
I got my phallic microphone in front of my face today. Second day of it. Still not used to it. Still feels weird. I actually wasn't going to do a show today, but it seemed like too much work to figure out how to do one of those strike-through lines on Twitter. You know what I mean by that? The words, how when you type, it like crosses it out in the word. I was too lazy to figure it out, and it wasn't, like, super easy, so I was like, fuck it, let me do a show. Because what I was going to do is say, no show today, happy Columbus Day with a strike-through through Columbus, and then put Native American Day. But I couldn't figure out the strike-through in, like, a minute and a half, so I was like, fuck it, let me just do a show. I was going to just relax, a little bit tired, a little bit beat down, but... apparently, there was some part of me that really did want to do the show, so I did it. When are we going to officially change that, by the way? I know that there's some places that are calling it Native American Day or Indigenous Peoples Day, but I think that on the national level, it's still referred to as Columbus Day, which is fucking ridiculous. Because for those of you who don't know, Columbus was actually a genocidal maniac. Well, he was just a prick in every possible way. And we celebrate him. They go, oh, well, he's because, you know, European descent, came here, yada, yada. Yeah, I don't care. Fuck that guy. He's not a representative of me. I fucking hate that guy. I would rather celebrate Native American Day. But anyway, that's the story, and that's how we're doing a show today. But there's a lot of stuff to talk about, so I think it actually worked out. It worked out for the best. So let me give you a little run-through here of what we'll be talking about. We got Neil Cavuto and his panelists on Fox Business, basically doing a little wink and a nod to everybody out there, letting them know, if you think Hillary Clinton's a progressive, boy, do we have some inside information that destroys that. We also have one of the Koch brothers talking about how he's only concerned about corruption and oligarchy. The only reason he's spending all of his money in politics is because he doesn't want the special interest to win. Think about how stupid that is. That's like Bill Cosby saying, I'm so concerned about sexual predators. That's what you are! You are that! Charles Koch is like, oh my god, the special interests. Fuck these guys, man. They're fucked up. Yeah, I know. You're one of them. And then later on in the show, President Obama versus Steve Croft from 60 Minutes on the issue of Syria. We have a surprising takeaway on that one. I might not be siding with who you guys might think I'd side with right now. Although, actually, maybe that's not true. That was a weird tease. And I'll give you one more here. We have the NSA, or actually I shouldn't even say that, the federal government, treating Black Lives Matter protesters like they're a terrorist group, quite literally. We'll dive into that. Oh, yeah, and I'll be announcing the Secular Talk shirt drive at the beginning of the second hour here, so... Stick around, people. We're just getting started. Let's kick it off with Neil Cavuto and his little minions over on Fox Business. Talking about Hillary Clinton and why I think this is a very important segment they did here. All right. Neil Cavuto and his panelists on his Fox Business show have a little inside information on Hillary Clinton, and it's very telling.
Just matched him on opposing a crucial trade deal, and now she's pitching a massive Wall Street crackdown. Charlie, you're not too worried about the latter. Why not?
None of my buddies on Wall Street are worried either. I give Bernie Sanders credit for one thing, being intellectually honest about what he wants to do. He wants to break up the banks. He wants to take really clear-cut, I'm not saying constructive because I don't agree with him, but clear-cut measures against Wall Street to rein them in. This is a bunch of gobbledygook that really leads to nowhere. When you peel back the onion on this thing, it's weak tea on every single level. Just think, Hillary Clinton wants to end. This is the President of the United States thinks that it's a policy of the President, prerogative of the President, to end spoofing and high-frequency trading. Give me a friggin' break.
Which is what you can't sell.
It's a way of high frequency trading, which I'm not going to work people with, but it means about that.
They can define it. I guarantee you, she can.
Well, but Ben Stein, what I do notice, I think there is a lot of theater to this. I think he's right, but I do also know that she wants to punish and extend the time which you can go after financial chieftains to make them pay for a lot of the fines and everything else that went wrong with the meltdown. She's making herself look like the anti-Wall Street candidate, but I've talked to many of your friends, Charlie, that she doesn't really mean it. Now, what does she mean?
Well, for one thing, individuals on Wall Street did not cause the meltdown. The meltdown was caused by a guy named Mr. Paulson, who was Secretary of the Treasury, and a guy named Mr. Bernanke, who was head of the Federal Reserve.
But Bernanke too surprised there aren't more execs in jail.
Bernanke should be in jail. But look, Mrs. Clinton is getting a huge amount of money from Wall Street liberals. The idea that she's going to be tough on them is just a bad joke.
Well, John Mack, the former Morgan Stanley, was telling me that back in the summer, saying, look, she has to do this. And I thought it was a rather cynical but probably honest read of what's going on. But she's been doing this enough, and by dismissing the trade deal and countering her old boss, these chits against business are piling up. Can she reverse them?
This is a wink, wink. People who work on Wall Street know that this will never go anywhere, and so does she. It's tapioca pudding for the left. She's trying to spoon feed it to them. It's just like that.
I think this may be a first, but I'm going to say it. Fox Business is right. They're right. Obviously, the only part they got wrong was when they said, well, I mean, Wall Street is not to blame for the Great Recession or the crash, the subprime mortgage crisis. Of course they are. You can also blame the regulators or the lack of regulation as well. So it's not wrong to throw in people from the government there as well. But absolutely, you blame the people on Wall Street. They're the people who lobbied the government to get them off their back, to get rid of the regulations, and to allow them to do whatever they want because they're the, quote, smartest guys in the room. And then what happens? You give them leeway to do whatever, and, of course, they run wild. They make incredible profit in the short term, and in the long term, they crash their companies, bankrupt their companies, and tank the economy. So are they to blame? Absolutely they're to blame. But it was so telling. Basically, every other part of that was true because they're explaining how, well, I'm not really worried about Hillary Clinton's progressive rhetoric because I don't believe it because I have people on Wall Street who tell me, wink, nod, it's cool. She's on our side. Shh. I think that's absolutely true. And remember, it's not just these guys saying it, and they do know people on Wall Street, but it's also there was an article in the Daily Beast from a while back that we spoke about. We covered it on the show. I gave you the direct quotes. Hillary Clinton is getting a free pass from the people on Wall Street to say whatever she wants against them. So think about how much she's on their side if they're that comfortable with her that they're letting her say anything. Because with President Obama, for example, now I do think he's also on the side of Wall Street by and large. I mean, maybe he cracked down a little bit in some areas, but he's also massively on their side, and the dollar figures show that. But with Obama, they were concerned about his rhetoric. So when he would ramp up his anti-Wall Street rhetoric, anti-CEO rhetoric, tax the rich rhetoric and all that stuff, they would write op-eds, some of the Wall Street guys, saying, oh, this is an attack on the rich, war on success, and they'd go on and on about how you're persecuting us, you're so bad, you're so wrong. So they feared him when he did progressive rhetoric, even though he was largely on their side. With Hillary Clinton, she's so on their side that they're just like, go ahead, say whatever the fuck you want. We don't care. You can say I want 100% tax on the rich, a marginal tax on the rich, and we'll shut up. Because we know that when push comes to shove, you're really with us because the Clintons have a track record of doing anything and everything for the establishment and big business and corporations and Wall Street. I mean, basically the whole point of the Clinton Foundation. They do some good work, don't get me wrong, that's absolutely true. But they do a lot of good work with money given to them from billionaires, from foreign governments, from Wall Street guys, and then they know that those people are buying influence, they're buying power, this is legalized bribery, this is corruption, not just with their individual campaigns, whether it's Senator Clinton or President Bill Clinton. That's also legalized bribery. But when you're rubbing elbows with some of the most powerful people and biggest businessmen on the planet in the circles that you run in, and they're donating to your foundation, obviously there are strings attached. What are you, ridiculous? What are you, a crazy person? That's clearly the case. So it's very telling when a Fox Business segment, the whole point of it is, yeah, Hillary doesn't even really believe it. But then also, in conclusion, let me say this. So that means you guys are either going to support Clinton or you're going to support Sanders, right? Because they said, well, we believe Bernie. We believe he really wants to do these things. He's been upfront about it from day one. Okay. And then you say you don't believe Hillary when she does the same rhetoric as Bernie. So you have your two options there. Either crack down on Wall Street, Bernie Sanders style, which you guys probably oppose, or the pro-Wall Street, do-whatever-you-want style of Hillary Clinton. You guys like that, right? So I take it all you guys are going to vote for Hillary Clinton, right? Oh, that's right. Logic does not work on Fox Business. So they'll somehow find a way to slam Hillary Clinton's approach to Wall Street and Bernie Sanders' approach to Wall Street, even though they're polar opposites, which means they're slamming every way of handling the problem. Now, you might say, well, there's a middle ground that they support, but that's not true. Of course that's not true. They're more on the side of Hillary, let them do whatever they want, but they can't bring themselves to say we're on her side because it's Hillary Clinton. Okay, now. So there's one story that breaches the issue of money in politics. Now we have another one, and this one is actually more straightforward. For my random comment on the way I'm dressed today, I'm wearing my older secular talk shirt, but I'm wearing it with a gray jacket, and it doesn't work. Virtually every show now, I look in the monitor, and I'm like, oh, I look like a jackass. That's all right. What are you going to do? As many of you have said to me before on Twitter and elsewhere, we're not watching or listening because of how you look. Thank you. That's actually a compliment, even though it's kind of a backhanded way of saying you're a hot mess. All right, let's go to the Koch brothers here. Charles Koch sat down with CBS to talk about his rampant legalized bribery of politicians. Let's listen.
The Koch brothers have helped fund a complex network of political action committees and advocacy groups, many of them tax-exempt, so donors don't have to be disclosed. The network, which now rivals the Republican National Committee in its financial clout, will spend $300 million in the next election year.
Do you think it's good for the political system that so much what's called dark money is falling into the process now?
Well, first of all, what I give isn't dark. What I give politically, that's all reported. It's either to PACs or to the candidates. And what I give to my foundation is all public information. But a lot of our donors don't want to take the kind of abuse that I do. They don't want these attacks. They don't want the death threats. So they aren't going to participate if they have to have their names associated with it.
But do you think it's healthy for the system that so much money is coming out of a relatively small group of people?
Well, listen, if I didn't think it was healthy or fair, I wouldn't do it. Because what we're after is to fight against special interests.
Some people would look at you and say you're a special interest.
Yeah, but my interest is just as it's been in business, is what will help people improve their lives.
Oh, yeah, and yeah,
get
yeah.
Get rid
yeah.
of these special interests. That's the whole thing that drives me.
There are people out there who think what you're trying to do is essentially buy power.
But I don't... Yep. What I want is a system where there isn't as much centralized power, where it's dispersed to the people.
Yeah. Mr. Billionaire is so concerned about the will of the people. If that's true, okay. Back it up with your money. So in other words, instead of buying politicians to do what you want them to do, how about you take all of your money and you pour it into Wolfpack? Now, Wolfpack is a movement to get money out of the political system so that the politicians can represent the people. So there it is. There's your answer. I'm challenging you. If you really believe what you're saying, you, Charles Koch, should tomorrow stop donating to all your little pet organizations which are pushing for right-wing causes, take all the money, and give it to Wolfpack, which is pushing for a constitutional amendment to get money out of politics, to end corporate personhood, to get clean elections, to make it so that the politicians represent the people. That's the whole purpose of that movement. So if you really support what you say you support, there's your answer. If you don't do that, I'm going to need you to www.shutthefuckup.com. How you like me now? So for those of you who might somehow have fallen for his rhetoric there and his pure sophistry, let me break this down for you. Think Progress reports on these guys. Quote, the duo and their affiliated organizations have spent more than $86 million in support of elected officials, presidential nominees, and organizations who do not support abortion rights or same-sex marriage. Over that same period, the review found that just over $86,000 was spent in support of 8 current office holders who support both abortion rights and marriage equality. So, they go into this tap dance when you call them out for being right-wing blowhards and funding right-wing causes. They go, no, we're not purely right-wing, we're libertarian. We believe in social freedoms 100%, and we're only economically conservative, where we want the government not involved at all, and we want a pure free market. I'm going to bust up that sentiment in a second, too. But this proves that's not true. $86 million to people against abortion rights and against gay marriage. So you're not libertarians. Spare me. Your actions prove otherwise. Now, to your point that, what, I'm a libertarian, I just want to get the government out of the way. Oh, is that so? Well, then why is it that they got subsidies? They took at least $157 million in subsidies for their different companies. So you're against big government. You're against the feds getting involved in the marketplace, unless, of course, it's the federal government helping your companies and helping you, in which case, then it's fine. But for everybody else, no, for you, I don't want the federal government getting involved in helping, whether it's food stamps or whether it's any other social safety net problem, any other safety net program that helps poor people with their problems. So these guys are a joke. And also, again, just to that point of, I care about the people more than anybody else. Oh, do you really? Is that what this is about? Well, then why is it that, for example, you lobby against the minimum wage? You lobby against the minimum wage, and you're going to sit there and say, our whole point is to help the people, is to be on their side, is to get rid of the big bad government and what they're doing. No, the problem is you. The problem is this oligarchy that we've set up. You've, in essence, made it so that you have more control over the government than the people fucking in government. You're more powerful than any senator or any congressperson because your money buys them to do exactly what the fuck you want them to do. So this is just flat out a system of, it's a corporatocracy or it's an oligarchy. It's corporatism in the sense that the corporations and the billionaires and the rich individuals own the government. And the government is simply not responding to the will of the people. So again, if you say you're in favor of the will of the people, wonderful. Shut down all of your political groups that are donating to politicians and buying them and divert all the money into Wolfpack. I'll wait for you to do it. Okay, let's Let's do one more here, and then we'll take our first break. We'll go to John Kasich. John Kasich was at an event in New Hampshire on Friday, and he shoved his foot in his mouth when discussing entitlement programs. So he said the following, quote, "We can't balance a budget without entitlement reform. What are we kidding? You're on Medicare and you want me to ignore the fact that it's going broke? You're not going to like me. I'd rather have people be in a position where they're aggravated with me so I can accomplish something than have them love me and accomplish nothing, okay? I'm not there to run a popularity contest." Oh, is that so? Well, allow me to respond with, yes, you are. So people don't really get it, the way a constitutional republic and a representative democracy is supposed to work. You're absolutely supposed to uphold the Constitution. Those are the things that are, it's not debatable. The rights that are in there are off the table. So yes, you absolutely have to uphold that, even if the will of the majority is against certain things in there. That's irrelevant. Then you can dismiss the will of the majority. But if we're not talking about a constitutional issue, you absolutely should be pushing for what the people want. That's why it's a representative democracy. You're supposed to represent the people. This isn't fucking rocket science. But look at this smug asshole. I'm not there to run a popularity. I'd rather have people hate me so I get something done. You'd rather have people in a democracy hate you and while you get shit done. But then by logical deduction, wouldn't the shit you're getting done be something that's bad and not good for the people if the people are objecting to it? It's always hilarious to me when people view dissent as evidence that I'm right. Like, oh, everybody disagrees with me on this, so now I'm emboldened. I must be right because everybody in a democracy disagrees with me. How does that make any sense to you? If anything, shouldn't you consider what the people are saying in a fucking democracy where they say, no, we pay taxes. We want to prioritize in an intelligent way. So, yeah, we want you to fund Medicare, Medicaid, Social Security. And if you want to cut shit, okay, let's have a conversation about cutting shit. Get rid of corporate welfare. Get rid of military spending. And get rid of, tax loopholes for corporations that are shoving billions of dollars in tax havens overseas. How about that? But he's like, no, I will cut your social insurance programs. And then when you're mad about it, I will use that as further evidence that I'm right. Okay, well, then you're an asshole. When somebody said his position would be a problem, here's how he responded, quote, well, you'd get over it, and you're going to have to get over it. This is a guy that you would want as president? And what's so sad is that Kasich is a moderate in this Republican Party. And that's true. He really is. But this, this shows you how off the rails the Republicans have gotten when this is your moderate. He's like, oh, what, you need those programs to survive and have a decent standard of living, and you don't like it if I cut it? Get over it. Very open-minded person we're dealing with here, huh? And remember, you shouldn't have a conversation about fiscal responsibility until we have a serious conversation about cutting defense spending. 57% of discretionary spending goes to the military. Now, don't get me wrong. The entitlement programs are a gigantic portion of the overall budget. But what's he not telling you? Not telling you that they're social insurance programs. They're not welfare programs. Well, Medicare and Social Security are social insurance programs. So in other words, for Social Security, you pay into it your entire life, and then when you retire, you're just getting back the money you fucking paid in. He makes it seem like, oh, moochers, parasites, to drain on the system, that's a problem. Well, that's just not the case. You're getting back what you're owed. In fact, let me give you some more detail on that. Quote, Social Security is currently projected to be fully solvent until the year 2037. After that, it is expected to be able to pay out 75% of benefits until 2084. That government program is more solvent than almost any other government program. It has a gigantic surplus right now. And he's like, well, these are the ones we might have to cut. No, if you want to fix it and make it solvent, as far as the eye can see, lift the cap on the Social Security tax. So, in other words, right now, it's up until, I think it's about $116,000 you pay Social Security tax. But everything over that, you don't pay tax on. So even if you make $8 million a year, you're only paying Social Security tax on your first $116,000 or so dollars. If you lift that cap and the person pays taxes on the entire $8 million, well, then that's it. Problem solved. There is no Social Security crisis at all. I mean, there isn't now, but that would really make it so there's no crisis. That's how you fix this. And also for Medicare, another example here, it's, quote, able to pay 100% of costs through 2030, and then after that, 86% of it. So when these guys say, as they often do, going bankrupt, Medicare, Social Security, going bankrupt, that's not correct. Like I just told you, until 2037, it pays out 100% in Social Security, and then after that, it's 75%. That's not bankrupt. You're still paying out 75% of it, and that's without doing any fixes. And then again, for Medicare, after 2020, it pays out 86% of its benefits. Oftentimes, you'll hear people say, well, at 2030, it goes bankrupt. That's not bankrupt. Paying out 86% of what it's supposed to pay out is nowhere near bankrupt. And again, minor fixes, reallocating tax dollars is all you have to do. Instead of dumping so much money into corporate welfare and dumping so much money into the war machine, put some of it towards Medicare because, you know, healthcare for old people is more important than blowing up random brown people overseas. Call me crazy. Okay. Let's take a break. When we come back, 60 Minutes host Steve Croft and President Obama spar over Syria. That's actually really interesting. And there was a hideous bombing in Turkey over the weekend. We'll discuss that and much more. All right, guys, stay right there.
Thank you.
bitch. All right, we're back, guys. Let's get to Obama and Steve Croft going back and forth here on the issue of Syria. This is interesting. I think my takeaway from this is a little bit different than a lot of you guys might expect up front here, just bringing up Steve Croft and Obama. 60 Minutes host Steve Croft and President Obama sparred over Syria. Let's watch.
There was some saber rattling between the United States and Russia on the Ukrainian border. Now it's also going on in Syria. You said a year ago that the United States, America leads, we're the indispensable nation. Mr. Putin seems to be challenging that leadership.
In what way? Let's think about this.
Well, he's moved troops into Syria, for one.
Yeah.
He's got people on the ground.
Right.
Two, the Russians are conducting military operations in the Middle East for the first time since World War II.
So that's bombing the people that
we are supporting.
So that's leading, Steve? So let me ask you this question. When I came into office, Ukraine was governed by a corrupt ruler who was a stooge of Mr. Putin. Syria was Russia's only ally in the region. And today, rather than being able to count on their support and maintain the base they had in Syria, which they've had for a long time, Mr. Putin now is devoting his own troops, his own military, just to barely hold together by a thread his sole ally.
And challenging your leadership, Mr. President.
No,
he's
no.
challenging your leadership.
Steve, I got to tell you, if you think that running your economy into the ground and having to send troops in order to prop up your only ally is leadership, then we've got a different definition of leadership.
So what Steve Croft is demonstrating here is something that we've spoken about a few times already. It's the Cold War mentality that apparently some people in the media can't break free from. So everything is viewed as, or everything is viewed through this spectrum of Russia or the former Soviet Union versus the U.S., and nothing, everything else is just minor details. Nothing else matters nearly as much, so it's all like this macho posturing of, ooh, Vladimir Putin is bombing people. Man, he's showing that he's a strong leader. Why aren't you being a strong leader, Mr. President? I don't understand. He says, quote, he's challenging your leadership. Why are you viewing it through that prism of everything is about, you know, everything is about the U.S. always? It's always this prom queen mentality of this insecure position. Everything always comes back to us. This has to be about us in one way or another. Well, no, actually, Obama just explained it there pretty well. Syria, they're an ally of Russia. Russia has a base there. It's one of their few remaining allies in the Middle East. So what they're doing here is actually fairly pragmatic, and I love how it didn't even come up in that part of the conversation here. Who's Russia fighting? Who's Russia fighting? Let's talk about that. Why are we not talking about that? Why is that not one of the most important aspects of the conversation? They're fighting jihadists, guys. The main rebel group now fighting Assad is ISIS. And the second main one is al-Nusra, which is an al-Qaeda branch in Syria. And then there are other, you know, ragtag groups of jihadists. Now, don't get me wrong. Whenever and wherever Vladimir Putin happens to bomb civilians, I'm 100% against that. But the fact still remains. Somebody needs to fight ISIS, and somebody needs to do it effectively. And why not Vladimir Putin? I'm tired of us wasting our blood and treasure in this fight. And then also remember, we haven't exactly been clear about what side we're on. Because originally we were anti-Assad, and oh my God, he gassed his people, and he's a brutal dictator, and we need to take out Assad. And then within a year we flipped. And we were like, well, no, actually we're going to ally with Assad to fight ISIS. And then now we did this mythical third position of let's try to resurrect moderate rebels to fight ISIS and fight Assad. And what happened? We wanted 5,400 fighters. We were going to train them and equip them. How many did we get? I shit you not, five. A grand total of five. So our position in Syria is Narnia. Our position in Syria is fucking Looney Tunes, is fantasy land. Vladimir Putin, like him or hate him, and I obviously don't like him, but he's fighting ISIS. He's fighting the jihadists. So in a world that made sense, where we really were able to prioritize intellectually what to do here, if I'm President Obama in that interview, not only am I saying, of course he's not challenging us, what I'm saying is he has my approval to do that. I'm going to pat him on the back. And then, of course, the counter-argument would be, well, he's bombed some of the rebels we back, Mr. President. He's challenging you directly. Yeah, but wait. Let's discuss those rebels. What did they recently do? The second they got into Syria, CENTCOM admits this. They handed all their weapons over to Al-Qaeda. They were supposed to go in there and fight Al-Qaeda or fight ISIS and fight Assad, but what did they do? They went in there and immediately handed over all their weapons to Al-Qaeda. So is it bad that they got bombed? No, that's actually a good thing. Yet those guys should get bombed. They're not really on our side. Are you kidding me? So if you prioritize intellectually here, you know, what should happen is Obama should pat Putin on the back and say, look, man, so long as you're only focusing on ISIS and al-Nusra and jihadi targets, I agree with you, and I'm with you. And you could actually use this as, you know, something to bring together the two sides and destroy this Cold War mentality. You could use, I mean, that's, in essence, what happened when Russia and the West were fighting the Nazis. There was this kind of brief come-together moment where, and of course, Stalin was a hideous monster, there's no doubt about that. But bottom line is, you can use this as, you know, a bridge to get to further conversations and further peace between Russia and the U.S., because there is a common enemy in ISIS. By the same token, you can do the same thing here with Iran. We've spoken about that before. Iran, they're also fighting ISIS. The Shia militias are fighting ISIS. You don't have to like the Shia militias. I don't like the Shia militias. Of course, they do horrific things as well. But if you're prioritizing the lesser of two evils, obviously, the Iranian government, as bad as they are, they don't have global caliphate ambitions. So if you're viewing the world through a lens of what makes sense versus a lens of geopolitics and imperialism and us versus them and this chessboard of world domination, well, then you know what the right thing to do is. But the media, instead of being aggressive in the right way here and saying, you know, why did you arm the jihadist rebels, instead of doing that, which are good questions, what are they doing? They're saying, why are you kowtowing to Vladimir Putin? He was challenging your leadership in Syria. This is so wrong. This is so bad. The counterargument is not, oh, no, I'll show you how macho I am. The counterargument is, what, are you a stupid person? Do you realize who he's fighting? Do you realize that it actually makes sense who he's fighting? Do you realize that this is an opportunity for us to come together as opposed to escalating further towards World War III? Okay. Now, let's move along here to the Afghan hospital bombing. We have an update here that, I mean, I guess it's somewhat positive, so we should give credit where credit is due here. All right. It's hard to find something positive in a fucking hospital bombing, but let me break this down for you. BuzzFeed News is reporting that the U.S. will make condolence payments to the families of the civilians killed in the bombing of the Afghan hospital. They say, quote, the bombing killed 22 people, including 10 patients and 12 staff members. President Barack Obama apologized to Doctors Without Borders, President Barack Obama apologized to Doctors Without Borders. The Pentagon said U.S. forces would work with the families to determine the appropriate payments that would be made to the families. The Department of Defense has made condolence payments to families of civilians killed in military action since 2001. Okay, so understand that they made it seem like it's super common there. I mean, if you really tallied up all the civilians killed as a direct result of our actions – or as a direct result of the conflicts that were stirred up because of our actions, we would have to do a fuckload more of payments here. And also the burden of proof is kind of fucked up in how they do this. So usually it's any military age male. You assume that if you killed them, they are terrorists, and then it has to be proved the other way. So this isn't something that's like, you know, common as they're laying it out, like, oh, yeah, the U.S. just handing out payments all over the place. That's not true. But credit where credit is due, if that's what they're going to do here, then, you know, that is a good thing. So first of all, this in no way should hinder an investigation. Let's remember that. And it should in no way hinder possible charges. Of course, there's not going to be charges because we're not party to the International Criminal Court, and there's a variety of other reasons why this isn't going to lead to charges. But it shouldn't hinder an investigation, and it shouldn't hinder charges. But secondly, you really have to give credit to the press on this. I think that's the more important aspect of the story, because this was a Doctors Without Borders hospital. So news got out quickly, and then the press reported the facts that generated outrage, I think, rightly. And if it was a different medical facility without charitable connections and without ties to journalists in the West, I don't think we would have had the same level of outrage. And in fact, we laid out on a show on Friday, what is it, five different times where the U.S. bombed medical facilities, whether it was in Serbia or whether it was in Afghanistan or Iraq previously. And some of those didn't generate nearly as much attention because they weren't all, you know, Doctors Without Borders or international charities or things like that. So it's much easier to downplay it. People don't have as many connections to journalists in the West. Some of them weren't at the peak of the digital age. Some of them were in the 90s. So it was like, you know, word didn't spread nearly as quickly as it does today. But because the press was so aggressive and they reported the facts on this, and the facts painted the U.S. in a damning way, that almost made it so the U.S. had to do something to say, we're not total moral monsters and, you know, here's a way of us showing it's a mea culpa in one way or another. And I think my main takeaway from this is if the media really did their job across the board with these kinds of deaths, well, then there would have to be fewer of them, because if you're forcing responsibility now on the government's part, well, then if you reported the same way about all the other civilian deaths that we're responsible for, whether in the drone war or otherwise, well, then it's almost like you have to reel it back in. You can't nearly be as aggressive in our tactics. And, you know, it's the idea of, as Obama's kind of advocated in the past, soft empire, soft imperialism. So he doesn't want to go balls to the wall, you know, George W. Bush neoconservative style, where you nation build and you do all this crazy stuff. He wants to do, okay, airstrikes here and there, drone strikes here and there, you know, maybe a few ground troops here and there, but hey, look, aren't I so much better? I'm not outright in seven different wars, even though I'm doing military interventions in seven countries. And if you hold them accountable, reporting the facts across the board, and all the news organizations doing it, and generating the outrage that this one example did generate, well, then, you know, they'd have to reel it back in a little. And, I mean, that's the whole purpose of freedom of the press, guys. So this is actually a success of freedom of the press. When you have a press that is willing to hold people in power accountable, this could be the result. Now, obviously, it's still a horrendous situation, and it doesn't get rid of the fact that these people died and the circumstances by which they were bombed is questionable at best. So that's all still a problem. But at least this is something to kind of fight back against the total screwed up nature of it. And it came about because of proper outrage based on good reporting from the media. Okay, now. Let's go to the Turkey situation. This is an amazing story, man. I couldn't believe the casualty figures when this came out over the weekend. There was a hideous bombing in Turkey over the weekend. At least 97 people are dead and hundreds are injured. It happened in the city of Ankara during a peace rally organized by Kurdish activists. Quote, two senior security sources told Reuters on Sunday that initial signs suggested ISIS was behind the attack. The pro-Kurdish People's Democratic Party, which said it was the target of the attack, had put the death toll at 128 people. So you have the Turkish government saying 97 people. You have the pro-Kurdish People's Democratic Party saying 128 people. I'm not exactly sure which one to believe. I tend to believe the Kurdish side more, because the Turkish government has had a history of being anti-Kurdish, so they might play down the figures more. I don't know for sure. I'm just throwing that out there for what it's worth. Now, there was some talk directly after the bombing. Some people were saying, well, this actually might have been the Turkish government doing it. In this case, I actually don't believe that, because the way in which the attack came about, people are almost certain now it was a suicide bombing, and that's not that's not the motive of the Turkish government. That's not the way they would do it. I mean, if the Turkish government was going to attack Kurds, as they've done and as they continue to do, they do it against PKK fighters when the PKK fighters are in the battlefield against ISIS. They'll bomb the Kurds with airplanes. So that's the way that they, by and large, attack the Kurds. So on this one, I don't think it's the fault of the Turkish government. I'm no fan of the Turkish government, but I do think that this was ISIS. But there is a very important thing to take away from this, though, which is to say to the Turkish people and to the Turkish government, pick your side. Because remember, like I just laid out for you, the Turkish government has no problem bombing Kurds when they're fighting on the battlefield against ISIS. So if you're doing that, whether or not you acknowledge it and whether or not you realize it, you are de facto on the side of ISIS, default on the side of ISIS in that battle. You say, we dislike the Kurds so much that, well, whatever, we're fine if some people who are way worse beat the Kurds. Well, no, that's totally unacceptable. And what, you think, does Erdogan think, the head of Turkey, that, you know, oh, after ISIS, if they were to beat the Kurds, it's all good, no worries, they're not going to try to come for you next. Now, Turkey actually has a very powerful military, a very big military. So there, I'm sure there'd be a fight there, no question. But do you really want to get to the point where ISIS is primarily attacking the Turkish civilians and your people in your country? I know there are Kurds who are in Turkey, but the government doesn't really view them as equal citizens to Turkish citizens. Let's keep it real. Or ethnic Turks, I should say. So pick a side, man. You know, what a brutal, vicious, incredible attack here on peaceful Kurds. And what are you going to do to respond to this? If you really do care about the Kurds, if you really want them to continue to be a part of Turkey, if you really hate the separatist movements and stuff, well, okay, then fucking protect the Kurds. Go after ISIS. Go after ISIS. As we've discussed before, there are Shia militias, Iranian-backed Shia militias going after ISIS. Take your hat off to them. The Kurds are going after ISIS. The Kurds, by the way, are also moderate Sunnis. Take your hat off to them. You can go down a list of other people who are fighting ISIS. The Turkish government, insofar as they have fought ISIS, it's really not much, and their fighting is more focused on Kurdish militants than on ISIS. Are you going to let that continue to be the case after this, Erdogan? No, you have to pick a side. You have to use this as an opportunity to mend fences with the Kurds and to move forward. But I fear he's not going to do that because to this point, he hasn't done that. And again, don't get me wrong, guys. Whenever there's a PKK militant terrorist who bombs civilians in Turkey, I'm 100% against that, obviously. But what we're talking about here is, you know, how you're going to treat peaceful Kurds who are not in the PKK. And also, furthermore, how you're going to treat Kurds who are fighting ISIS in the PKK or not. And bottom line is, the Turkish government has shown repeatedly they're more ideologically aligned with, you know, ISIS than they are with the PKK or with Kurds. And that's it feels wrong to say that because Turkey's a top ally of the U.S. And, oh, my God, how can you denigrate our top ally like that? But it's the truth, man. In the same way that the government of Saudi Arabia is brutally repressive, they're vicious, they're Salafists. It's the most fundamentalist, ultra-conservative interpretation of Islam, and they do horrific things in the name of it. Well, you know, the Erdogan is a fundamentalist Muslim in his own right. Not as bad as the Saudi regime, but pretty bad. And if you don't take away from this that you need to go after ISIS, you're hopeless. All right, let's All right, let me do one more here, and then we'll take our final break, and then we'll come back, and I'll give you guys the Secular Talk shirt drive. Yay! So after the killing of Freddie Gray, Baltimore erupted in protests, and the federal government responded in an incredible way that we're just learning about now. So the Washington Post is reporting that there was, quote, a multi-day campaign of overhead surveillance by city and federal authorities during a period of historic political protest and unrest, small planes flew over the area in a pattern that was basically exactly where the protests were happening, and they allegedly collected information in bulk. They say, quote, "Discovery of the flights, which involved at least two airplanes and the assistance of the FBI, has prompted the American Civil Liberties Union to demand answers about the legal authority for the operations and the reach of the technology used. Planes armed with the latest surveillance system can monitor larger areas than police helicopters and stay overhead longer, raising novel civil liberties issues that have so far gotten little scrutiny from the courts." They continue, "Civil libertarians have particular concern about surveillance technology that can quietly gather images across dozens of city blocks, in some cases even square miles at a time, inevitably capturing the movements of people under no suspicion of criminal activity into a government dragnet." So, Edward Snowden weighed in on this story here on Twitter, and he confirmed what we've suspected for a while, quote, "Tech designed to fight Al-Qaeda gets used to track Black Lives Matter." So this is very similar to what was done to Occupy Wall Street, how in an illegal and unconstitutional way you'd have authorities at the federal level and the state level infiltrating the movement, spying on everybody, quote, discrediting radicalizers, as we learned from the NSA leaks as well. You know what, you have some questionable in your past, whatever kind of porn you're into, whatever kind of embarrassing personal details there are, well, we could just use that against you if you're an agitator against the government and the authorities. Well, the same thing is going on with Black Lives Matter. Planes were collecting bulk information from the protests. That's illegal, that's unconstitutional. You didn't go to a court, you didn't get a warrant, you didn't abide by the Fourth Amendment. This wasn't specific for a specific investigation. It's, oh, these guys are against us, the powerful, the establishment, the government. They're rocking the boat here. Collect everything you can on them and use it against them when the time comes and when it's necessary. No, this is exactly the kind of thing that is not allowed under the Constitution. As I said in our talk with Glenn Greenwald, man, it was kind of amazing to see when you read the Fourth Amendment, it's worded almost to say exactly that stuff like this shouldn't be allowed. Now, obviously, that's absurd because at the time, this stuff didn't exist. But nonetheless, the way they word it, it obviously, any direct reading of it applies to this kind of stuff today. This is clearly unreasonable searches and seizures. What? You're doing your First Amendment rights, freedom of speech, freedom to protest, freedom of assembly, and then they say, well, okay, we don't agree with that. By the way, it doesn't matter if you don't agree with it if you're the government, but they say, we don't agree with that, so we're just going to collect all the information, even though we're not allowed to do that. That's like doubly unconstitutional. So this is absurd. Look, man, if there's somebody in the movement doing something wrong, violating a law, whatever, okay, go through the process that we have set up in order to bring that person down and put them in jail. If you know that person X did a crime, well, then find the fucking evidence to prove that person X committed a crime, and then you'll be allowed to gather more information and bring them to trial and, you know, put them in jail, and we'll all be fine with that. But that's not what's happening here. What's happening is bulk collection of data from people who the government and the authorities disagree with. That's not allowed. We shouldn't tolerate it. And it should be obvious to anybody who sees that we're using Al-Qaeda technology to go after Black Lives Matter. All right, now, let's take a break. When we come back, we're going to talk about the Secular Talk shirt drive, and I got some great stories to finish the day for you as well. We got the hemp industry is actually roaring back, but we should be worried about that for a variety of reasons that we'll get into. And cops get hand jobs. Yeah, there's nothing else to add to that story, is there? All right, stay right there, guys. We'll be right back. Of a bitch. All right, welcome back, guys. All right, let me do my little important little segment here. So back by somewhat popular demand, and by that I mean like maybe four or five people asked about this, we're doing a secular talk shirt drive. So we did one, I want to say it was a little over a year ago. Yeah, about that. At the time, we had maybe 30,000 or 40,000 YouTube subscribers or something like that. And we did it, I believe it was specifically for Wolfpack. So we wanted to, you know, raise some money for the cause of getting money out of politics. And it did pretty well. It did better than I expected. I don't remember exactly how many shirts we sold, but it was a decent number. So some people asked me about it. Lilith and I spoke about it, and we're going to do it again here. So if you want to check out the shirts, you can go to booster.com/secular talk. It's a limited time thing, so I should mention that. I really usually don't like doing, you know, shirt sales, merchandise sales, and stuff like that. And this time around, it's for two things. So half of the money is going to go to Wolfpack. So same thing, trying to get money out of politics. We hope we can help a little bit here and give them a nice chunk of change. But also half the money is going to go to Lilith Penn. Now, Lilith Penn, for those of you who don't know, longtime listeners already know this, She's been with me for a while, and she's basically the only other person who kind of regularly does work for Secular Talk. And her, I wouldn't be able to do what I do without her. So her contribution is immeasurable. She basically runs the Twitter feed in the sense that she always tweets out the videos. I mean, obviously you can tell if somebody's being a snarky asshole, that's usually me. But if it's like a tweet of the videos from the previous day, Lilith does that. Lilith posts a lot of the content on Facebook as well. Lilith handles a bunch of stuff behind the scenes here, and she does it all for absolutely nothing. So I think that this is a great way to try to show appreciation here and to give her something for her efforts, because she's super nice about it, and she's, you know, she'd never ask for anything, and I just think it's the right thing to do to have some kind of way to raise some funds here to have a thank you for her for all the work that she does for me and for Secular Talk and for you guys as well. So half the money for Wolfpack, half the money for Lilith. The way this site works, there's apparently no international shipping, but if you contact Lilith, we can make it work. So it's at Stardust Lilith on Twitter. I think she'll get it shipped to her, and then she'll do it international. So again, there's another example of her going out of her way to help out and do the right thing here. The drive ends on November 3rd, and all the shirts are shipped out between a week and 2 weeks after that. So, like, let's say you order one today, you order one right now, which is obviously what any rational person would do. It doesn't ship out until then, so just don't worry, because obviously it'll be a little bit of time before you get it, but that's the way that they do this. They ship them all out in bulk with this particular provider. And the shirt looks a lot like the one I'm wearing right now. This is from the original Secular Talk shirt drive. I know some people don't like the colors, but I don't know, man. These are the Secular Talk colors. What can I say? It's the bright, obnoxious, ridiculous lime green and then black. So go for it, man. I mean, it's a limited time thing, and not only are you getting the shirt, but you're also helping two good causes here. So check it out. You know, we'll leave the link in the video description box, and hopefully you guys will get some merchandise. Okay. Now we'll talk about hemp. Newsweek is reporting that hemp is quietly saving the economy of Kentucky. They say, quote, "The fallout from the tobacco industry's troubles have left many farms in Kentucky struggling to stay afloat. A few years ago, Kentucky's Commissioner of Agriculture made a bold move. He vowed to revive Kentucky's farms by bringing back industrial hemp. Farmers haven't cultivated hemp in Kentucky since World War II, when the U.S. government needed the fiber for military supplies. They say, though it looks and smells and is regulated like marijuana, industrial hemp isn't pot. The multipurpose crop can be used to produce a diverse assortment of products that will benefit a number of businesses, including food, automotive, pharmaceutical, and industrial." So this, I think, is good news, what they're laying out here. But then, of course, there's the other part of the conversation, which is that the federal government can shut it down anytime. Because, as they explained, hemp is regulated like it is marijuana. Now, it doesn't get you high, but because it's related to marijuana, we have this mindset of, and it's categorized under law as, it's illegal, it's wrong, it's bad, you shouldn't be involved in it in any way. Now, when I read through the article here, one of the first things that came to mind was Joe Rogan was speaking about this a little over a year ago. He was having a conversation with somebody on his podcast, and he basically said this is kind of like an intelligence test in terms of how our society chooses to regulate and treat a product like hemp. Hemp has so many uses, it is ridiculous. To invent something that would have as many uses as hemp does, it would seem like a fucking miracle product. So it has all of these practical uses, doesn't get you high, but it's banned because it's related to a different plant that gets you high, and the high of that plant as well is a rather moderate high. It's not necessarily a hard drug. Think about how ridiculous that is. Because it's related to a plant that gets you high, we're going to ban it and we're going to regulate it as if it is a plant that gets you high, as if it is a drug. Well, that's ridiculous. And you're handcuffing the people of Kentucky. I mean, think about, we have so many laws on the books that are just old, they're archaic, they're draconian, they're ridiculous, they're outdated, there's no logical thought behind them. But the federal government just sits there, what do you mean? That's how it is. That's what it says on paper, so there's got to be some kind of reason for it, right? Oh, really? Is that the kind of logic that we're using here? I don't try to sit down and have a conversation with somebody in Congress who agrees with treating hemp like it's a drug and just see what kind of rationale they come up with. There's no way it would make sense because there is no logical reason to have it banned. There is no reason to treat it like it's a drug. Now, obviously, we could have a different conversation here about drugs as well, in which you guys already know my answer to that. At the very least, I think you should decriminalize it or legalize it. But either way, bottom line is that's a separate conversation, totally different. This is, hey, should we allow hemp, should we allow this product that has a variety of uses and there's virtually no downsides to it? The answer to that is clearly yes. And for the government to just sit around at a federal level and say, well, you know, it is what it is and let's not act to try to fix this, well, that just shows so many things. It shows intellectual laziness. It shows that your true priorities are not about fixing problems or doing what's right or caring about the people. In reality, they're usually just responding to donors' needs and doing whatever the corporations want, the billionaires want. And it's time to put an end to this. Now, you guys know, man, at the state level with a variety of different things, they're moving in the right direction, whether it's euthanasia in some places, or I should say doctor-assisted suicide in some places, or marijuana in some places. Now we're starting to do that with hemp as well. But because we haven't moved on a federal level, I think we're missing out on millions, if not billions of dollars in revenue and so many jobs being created because so many industries are handcuffed needlessly. They shouldn't be handcuffed, but they are handcuffed for a variety of reasons, including intellectual laziness and not learning about this and the government not being responsive to the people, rather listening to the corporations and the donors. All right, now, I'm going to save the more silly stories here for a little later. But let me move on to a foreign policy article here, which I think is really important, and it really demonstrates something that we spoke about the other week, the Vice News piece with the gay radical Islamist, who, of course, de-radicalized and explained how he got into his position and how he got out of his position. That was a really, really powerful story. Oh, by the way, that guy reached out to me on Twitter, and really nice guy, and he said some great things. He said it was a good analysis. And I think there's a similar takeaway from this story, so let's do it. Foreignpolicy.com has an incredible article out about the disturbing fundamentalism of Prime Minister Modi in India. They say, quote, in late September, a Hindu mob in the northern Indian town of Dadri killed Muhammad Akhlaq, a 50-year-old Indian Muslim, for allegedly consuming and storing beef. In August 2014, Hindu extremists killed a Muslim man in North India after police charged him with the crime of slaughtering a cow. And in March 2015, a new video showing a Muslim man tied with a noose, beaten, and forced to praise the Hindu deity Ram went viral. The man's crime was buying and selling cows. Top official in Modi's ruling BJP called the killing an unfortunate accident, even though it was murder. All right, so let's stop here and reflect on this for a second. The rhetoric of his party is not, you know, outraged, hey, we need to fix this problem, hey, we need to change our mindset, we can't go killing people because of cows. No, they said it was a, quote, unfortunate accident. Guys, it was a lynching. They hit this poor guy over the head with his wife's sewing machine, and then a mob beat him until he fucking died. So we're talking about a lynching, a murderous mob here, and the ruling party in India said, well, it was an unfortunate accident. They say, quote, we are more attached to the cow than our own children, a Save the Cow member and the local state secretary of the BJP youth wing told the New York Times. Whoa. They said it. That's not me caricaturing or extrapolating on their words. No. We are more attached to the cow than our own children. All right, let's continue. Hindus regard the cow as an object of reverence, and many see its consumption as an abomination. After Aklok's murder, BJP legislator Raha Singh tweeted the sections from the Hindu text, the Vedas, that mandates killing people who slaughter cows. Good googly moogly. So after they killed this poor guy for allegedly having cow meat, let's be clear, he actually didn't have it. That was part of the article when we covered it last time. They do that, and then they're like, oh, and here's part of my religious text which says it's totally cool that we did this. So back off. And he thinks that's an argument. He's like, oh, gotcha. See, it's in my religious text. So I win. No, you don't win. I don't give a shit if it's in your religious text. That doesn't mean it's right. That doesn't mean we should base laws off of it. They say in recent speeches, Modi has condemned the widespread murder of cows. Quote, the widespread murder of cows. This is what he's condemning. But since taking office as prime minister in May 2014, he has never directly condemned the killing of Muslims. Now, they go on to say, to give numbers on that, to give specifics, and how big of a problem it is, the violence against Muslims in India. Muslims are about 14% of the population. And the problem now is Hindu fundamentalists are emboldened, and they're pushing for even more draconian laws that just outlaw any negative thing in any way ever towards cows. And, you know, reading this, the main takeaway, again, is, well, there's two main takeaways. Number one, the right-wingers are the problem here. It's the fundamentalists and the far right that seemingly are a problem everywhere. And thing number two is, yet again, a clear example of the power of belief. So as we talked about in the Vice News piece with the former gay radical Muslim, and how he described how he came to believe what he believed, and it's the same thing in this case. Guys, this is what happens if you're raised in a religion or in a culture or in a society that teaches you from day one that this is what you're supposed to believe. Cows are sacred. You can never question that. That's off the table. Any person who does anything wrong in any way or against a cow, if they eat it or hurt it, whatever, that person deserves death. If you're taught that from day one of your life, you're going to fucking believe it. And if you believe it, as Sam Harris always says, beliefs have consequences. And this is a perfect example of beliefs having consequences. To the point where the guy who's the leader of India, speeches where he's like, oh, you know, the problem here is how our sacred cows are not being treated right. When there's been a bunch of examples of people being lynched, people being killed, violence against people, because of alleged things against cows, the problem in his mind is not, oh, these poor people, these poor Muslims in this case. No, the problem is why can't they fucking respect my beliefs and respect these cows? What the fuck? They don't believe what you believe. This is what it all comes down to. Guys, understand that secularism is a civil liberty. So you have a right to secularism. Secularism just means neutral government on religious issues. So the Christians can't force Christian law on you. The Muslims can't force Sharia law on you. The Hindus can't force Hindu law on you, where apparently you can't do anything wrong against cows. You can have your beliefs. I don't agree with your beliefs. I think they're wrong. You can have your beliefs that, oh, cows are sacred and this and that. But the second you start physically hurting other people or taking away other people's rights as a result of your mythical bullshit, well, then that's a problem for everybody. And the issue here, again, is the fundamentalism. And it's not always the case. Sometimes it is the case, but it's not always the case that there's some logical geopolitical grievance that leads to people being violent. Sometimes it really is just you're brainwashed from when you're young and your beliefs are troublesome, and you act on them in the real world, and that's exactly what we're seeing here. And this story is really important, I think, because it also shines a light on something we don't talk much about. I think people are well aware, because we've seen it time and time again, of what fundamentalist Christians can do and what some of their most hate beliefs are, what fundamentalist Muslims do. We see that all the time. We talk about it all the time. And, you know, we usually don't see it in other contexts as well. So people might get the misimpression that, you know, fundamentalism is specific to some religions but not others, and also tribalism as a result of fundamentalism is only specific to some religions. No, I mean, based on the text, based on the beliefs, you can act horribly, or just based on the tribalism that comes about as a result of your fundamentalism, you can act horribly. And here we have a case of both. The beliefs are troublesome themselves, and they're wrong, but then also the tribalism that comes about as well as a result of that is bad and wrong. So this is something that we should speak out against. I mean, obviously, you guys know this is no cause for military intervention in India. It's not our job to police everybody for everything and all their problems. But let's face it, this is a problem, and this is something that needs to be addressed, and you can only hope that the left and the more secular voices prevail in India, and it's about time people stop treating Prime Minister Modi like he's some sort of genius. I mean, this is a guy who gets a lot of praise from the media. I don't know why. This is an example of a lot of the troubling beliefs that he has and the fact that he's backed by Hindu fundamentalists, and they support grotesque things like this. Okay, now, let's do two lighter stories here to finish the day off. Oh my God, this might be my favorite story right here. Some undercover cops got hand jobs, and now they're suing. That's probably the last thing I'd ever do after I got a hand job. Whatever the opposite of suing is what I'd want to do after a hand job. Mediaite reports, quote, the Minneapolis officers claim that data on undercover officers is private and the defendants violated the Minnesota Data Practices Act. The lawsuit says the city failed to protect their identities as required by law, and the disclosure compromised the officers' ability to conduct undercover operations. All right, so let's pause here. They're mad that somehow the media got their names and reported on it, and now they have another hilarious quote that's like, I have so much anxiety and stress now because you leaked that I got a hand job. Come on. And what's so hilarious is this is so counterproductive. So you didn't want everybody to know your name. Now you're suing. Now it's a national story and everybody knows your name. If you didn't sue, only in like the local area or maybe the state would people know your name. But now that you're suing, it's national news. And I'm fucking reporting on it here. This is at least 12,000 more people that are going to know about this because you couldn't keep your fucking mouth shut. Unbelievable. So they say, quote, the officers have also been harassed at work and their reputations have been damaged. They've been harassed at work. Harassed at work. Really? What's everybody else around the police station saying to you now that they know you got jacked off? And they're like, oh my God, I can't believe you got jerked off. That's so naughty. I've never had that done to me in my life. No, you know what they're doing to them? They're poking fun at them and saying, ah, you idiots, you got jacked off, and then you did the bust afterwards. Ooh, bust is a bad word there, because two meanings. But this is, the way the article explains it, guys, this is just like that episode of South Park. You know the episode of South Park where I forget the guy's name, but he's the head officer in South Park. He's got the beard, and he dresses up as a female prostitute. He blows his customers, and then after they finish, he goes, freeze! I gotcha. That's basically what happened here. They're like, okay, jerk me off. After they get jerked off, they're like, freeze! We're going to bring you down for prostitution. What the fuck is this? All right, so here's specifically what they did. Quote, on the recording, after nearly 30 minutes of small talk about tattoos, the weather, and his broken hand, Lisi, who's one of the officers, who also compliments the woman's anatomy, interrupts the massage and asks the woman if she wants him to flip onto his back. For those of you who don't know, that's code word for beat me off. She begins touching his genitals as part of a naked body-to-body massage. Lisi can be heard moaning. A few moments later, by the way, if anybody's listening to this and touching yourself, stop. I hope none of this makes you horny and go to a Pornhub page, because I'm reading it, and that's just creepy. All right, hold on. A few moments later, he says the words, repeat customers, which is the code to backup officers that it's time for an arrest. They then enter the room. Nearly 20 minutes into his interaction with the woman, court documents say, Reader, I guess another officer, pointed to his groin after she asked if there were any areas she had missed. She started to rub his genitals, and they negotiated a price for further action, quote, that would take care of him. So they're describing two different officers there who went in, they got the massage, they're chit-chatting. They're like, right there, go for it. And then, boom, boom, over. And then they're like, oh, I'm going to have to arrest you now. No, the way it works is the second that they offer it or the second they go to do it, you go, gotcha, against the law. But no, you wanted to enjoy it because you know deep down it's something that probably should fucking be legal. That's what the annoying thing about this, man. There are going to be people screaming, lock them up for doing this, for doing that. No, that's not the takeaway. The takeaway is it should be legal. It should be legal for everybody. Why would you... They arrested the poor women after they beat them off. Do you have no heart? Do you have no soul? I mean, there are endorphins or whatever that, you know, you get after you orgasm. They say, like, pillow talk and how close you feel to the person you just fornicated with. That's based on that's science, guys. That's based on biology. There's a reason why your reward centers lit up in your brain and you feel compassion and you like the person. These guys busted a nut and they're like, freeze! You're just bad people, man. You're just bad people. And again, to draw an analogy here, so you know that this should be legal for everybody here, imagine if it was murder or something like that. Like you're busting somebody for murder, setting up some kind of a sting somehow, or terrorism, and you do the terrorist attack, and then you go, freeze! And then you bring the person in. Well, everybody would go, that's ridiculous. You took place in the terrorist attack. You murdered people? And then you're going to lock up the other person who murdered with you? No, they'd say, you murdered too. You should fucking go to jail. Because that's a real crime, and we all, no matter what the circumstances, we're against murder. But for this, it's like, okay, he got beat off. He probably enjoyed it. The real takeaway should be, you don't go to jail. She doesn't go to jail. But neither should anybody else. This stuff should be legal, taxed, and regulated so that we make it safer. Look just outside of Las Vegas, for example, where prostitution is legal. How many STDs are transmitted there on a regular basis? How many are there? How much money do the women make there? Are they at risk of physical assault when they're there? No, but now, compare that to a place like Hunts Point, compared to a place where it's illegal, STDs are all over the place, the women get battered on a regular basis, you know, you have the women get paid next to nothing. The problem is because it's illegal. If you make it legal, you bring it into the sunlight, you tax it and regulate it, well then that's a little thing I like to call freedom. And that's a scenario where everybody wins. In this case with the officers, they got busted doing something a lot of guys want to do, and their only problem was the hypocrisy. The problem was not the action itself. The problem was you busted a nut and then you arrested her. That's the problem. Okay, finally. A man named Alan Whitman used a chemistry kit to create an incredibly disgusting smell, and now he's getting rich off of it. This is a really interesting story. Vice says, quote, by Whitman's own account, the smell has a whiff of butt crack, kind of a sewer smell, with a hint of dead animal in there. When Whitman realized he was going to get laid off from the truck manufacturing company where he worked, he and his friend decided to have a little fun. Their favorite prank was dribbling a little liquid ass near the microwave. That's always going to make me laugh. In the break room at work, and then pulling up a chair to watch the chaos unfold, and there was chaos. Management fixed the water main, replaced the microwave, pulled up the carpet, and closed off the bathrooms in an attempt to get rid of the stench, all to no avail. Sensing how powerful the product was, Whitman realized he could have something profitable, so he decided to sell it. Now get this, 2 years later, the spray had taken off, not only as a piece of prank equipment, but as a way to train medical professionals. That's fucking brilliant, man. I'm very happy at the way this story unfolded. I mean, it is kind of fucked up that, like, you pranked your business. Granted, they were going to fire you, so kind of fuck them, too. but you pranked them to the point where they had to replace the carpet and fucking fix the bathrooms and get rid of the water main and shit. Okay, you went too far there. But overall, I like this story. The guy probably wasn't even happy at his old job. He was busting his ass. He probably wasn't getting paid well. And then he realized, like, oh, wait, I kind of invented this thing with my chemistry kit. How about I whatever, patent it? I don't even know if he patented it, but sell it and see if I make some money off it. The dude got rich off it. Oh, that's awesome. And when you think about it, that really is a practical application of something like this, too, a way to train medical professionals. I mean, I guess what, you have to have a thick skin. You have to get used to the most putrid, grotesque smells if you're going to be a medical professional. So you got to train using liquid ass. The one thing they don't mention in the article, though, which is kind of upsetting, is they didn't give me the exact amount of money that he made off of it. But cheers. I hope he made a lot of money off of liquid ass. Well done, sir. All right, guys, out of time. Love you. We will be back tomorrow, same time, same place. Kisses, smooches. I was going to say everybody have a great Columbus Day, but fuck Columbus. Happy Native American Day. They should really officially change it to that. All right, later, guys. Have a good one.